Welcome back, WNST, Towson from Baltimore and Baltimore Positive. We are positively doing the ho-ho-ho thing here and delivering the holiday magic to your door. Our friends at DeHarker Brothers, they've not only become an employee-owned company, they're very proud of that. I hope you go out and listen to Sean and Steve tell the incredible story. Go out to Facebook and hear their story. But more than that, just get the ice cream. $15.70 off the little pink bus we deliver out here. And when my back gets fixed, I'll hold the whole box up here and tell you we put 8 pints of this in. Not empty pints. These are the ones that are already previously consumed by me and my wife. And occasionally my cat will have a little bit of it, but I didn't even give the cat any of the sweet potato crumble because I ain't sharing like that. They got the eggnog, they got the peppermint bark, 28 flavors available, one click away. The code is Baltimore Positive. I do not want to overlook our other sponsors, Fadley's, which is where we'd probably be hanging with this dude who was our next guest over a crab cake and a proper, especially on a cold day after it snows, maybe little crab soup, little cream of crab, something like that with some crackers. But I'm going to work that curbside. You should be too. And if you want to make someone really, really happy, you can deliver that DeHarker ice cream to them, or you can ship them some Fadley's crab cakes anywhere in the U.S. Still time to do that. Davey was so busy the other day, she couldn't come on the program. She was going to come on and talk about the curbside thing in the city and all the regulations and everything that's going on down in Lexington Market, but she's busy shipping crab cakes. Also, our friends at State Fair and our friends at El Guapo, they're curbsiding. We're telling everybody, take care of each other. I mean, come on, shop local. We all know somebody down the street can use the business. I gave some love to Amici's last week, some love to Pierpoint. I'll be out taking care of Fadley's later on in the week because my belly needs a crab cake or two. Don, we'll talk about Moeller and Gary Realty, and I know you're proud of your son, and they're selling houses, and they're doing all that stuff, and I'm going to encourage everybody to go to Moeller and Gary Realty. But, you know, more than anything, you jumped on this right after the election, beginning of the month. You said, look, this lockdown, the COVID, we need to get our local people on again because we're out of election season. We need to get local health and education, but more than that, just people taking care of people. And you were a public servant for 2 decades. You know everybody's doing double duty here in the holidays during a pandemic.
They absolutely are. And just recently, we got a new Baltimore City Council inducted, inaugurated. We got a new mayor in Brandon Scott, and we've got one of the folks really making a difference in our city, and that's 9th District Councilman John Bullock. Dr. John Bullock, welcome to Baltimore Positive.
Hey, glad to be here. Thanks for having me.
You know, I'm going to start probably where we shouldn't, but every now and then there are debates that break out in our public discourse. Every time I think I've seen it all, then I see something else. And we've got this absolutely insane attack that Tucker Carlson and the Wall Street Journal have decided to launch at Dr. Jill Biden because she's not a pediatrician.
Did you just say that idiot's name on my programming?
Did you really begin a segment with that idiot? I am so sorry, but when we have Dr. John Bullock, who I imagine is pretty proud of his doctoral degree from the University of Maryland College, my guess is, Dr. John, you worked pretty hard for that degree.
Absolutely, and I would say the same thing for Dr. Biden. The reality, unfortunately, is that we're dealing with an anti-intellectualism in this country right now, and so rather than respecting her academic pursuits and her educational credentials and her experience, there's an attempt to tear her down. But I think that wiser heads are prevailing at this point. And I think, to be quite frank with you, it's also very sexist. You know, there are so many of us included that have a PhD, but oftentimes it's women who are being attacked as opposed to being honored and respected.
I'm always considering the source, right? And I was always one of the kids that was like one of the achiever guys that was looking up to the people even smarter than me and trying to figure out how did they figure out the Rubik's Cube like that? You know what I mean? And you know, and Don was my teacher. Don knows of the gifted and talented kids I had around all of us in Dundalk put together in the early 80s to try to push us forward. I mean, I can't imagine the day that I was a doctor. I mean, that's something I felt like that was out of my league, right? Well, I felt like that would, I mean, and I know the respect you have when we have Rhodes Scholars and stuff that you felt like as a kid from Mount St. Joe going out to Western Maryland, it felt like it was, That was a little further ahead than I thought I could take this spaceship.
Well, and I think the councilman said something really important. I don't run around bragging about my doctorate in education. I don't sign my name Dr. Moeller. I don't know why. I just don't.
Hold on, you're a doctor?
I am indeed. And
I know your daughter is because you've called her that.
I am, and it was, you know, four of the best years of my life being surrounded with incredible professors and an incredible cohort of folks that went through the program with me. I often say, I don't know about you, John, but I never felt more well-read, more up-to-date on issues, more challenged intellectually than I did at that. And again, I don't share that to brag about it. Was I pleased that I was able to do it and go through that process? Of course, I'm prouder of my daughter who did it while raising five kids. And as I say to people, if you think I'm not going to call somebody who's an elementary school principal and who's raising five children and at the same time earned her doctorate at the University of Maryland, you don't think I think she's worthy of the title doctor? I just don't understand the attack. And I think you said it, Councilman, and maybe you can expand upon it, and then we will get to local issues. But I had to, since you have that doctorate. I said to my wife this morning, it's funny, when I read the Tucker Carlson piece, I said to her what you did. I said, you know, the only thing that I can attach this to that makes any sense is he believes this anti-intellectualism that if you're smart, that's a bad thing. And my wife has famously said over the years, anyone who has been around her has heard her say, I don't know what this pension is to have people who aren't all that smart in important positions. She said, if Barack Obama is the smartest guy in the room, I kind of want my president to be the smartest guy in the room. So where do you, I mean, you're a college professor, you're an elected official, got a vast array of experiences. What do you think is at the core of this anti-intellectualism? Throwing your curve because you weren't prepared to talk about that. No, but what do you think is at the core of that?
No, this is fantastic. I think you can draw an interesting contrast, right? And so I'm not going to do anything to attack the first lady that's currently with the president, but put it in these terms, right? I mean, you've had a first lady and Michelle Obama, you've had a first lady and Mrs. Trump. And so there's a vast difference in terms of communication styles. And I think in some ways, there's an attempt not only to compensate for some of the challenges with communication with the current occupant, and then also make an attack in terms of legitimacy of the president-elect, and by extension, his wife, who, again, has been an educator and has an earned doctorate. I agree with you. You know, for me, you know, it was a fantastic 4 years of my life. I have so many books. I have my own library based upon all of that reading and some of the best experiences. And I'll be honest with you, for me, it was a huge achievement being a first-generation college student, right, to be able to get a PhD, become a professor. And then also part of the reason why I use that title is also to inspire young people to say, hey, you know, you can make it as well. And I look at her as also inspiring women, young people, mothers as well. You mentioned your daughter, and that's fantastic. I mean, I had no children when I was getting my doctorate, and I have two now. So I can only imagine the challenge involved with that. But yeah, it speaks to the unfortunate and low level discourse in our country these days. And it is quite unfortunate, but I am encouraged by the response from people across racial, economic, political lines who are saying this is out of bounds. This is not what we should be doing.
We'd love to get to know our guests when they're here. Give everybody a little bit of your background if they don't know and they haven't read up on how you believed you could go get a doctorate, right? Like, and how I could know Moeller 38 years and didn't. That's it. It's over. You're now Dr. Moeller forever. No. It's over. Oh, man. You're now the good doctor.
He's one of the best public servants that we have, but also, you know, a shining light. And I think both of your stories being connected as much as with my story. So, you know, I was fortunate to get a full scholarship to go to college. I'm originally from Philadelphia.
You escaped. Good job.
Yeah. You know, I'm a Ravens fan now. My Eagles are terrible. But anyway, I'll tell you this. I got to college, and I remember I had a professor my freshman year who said, you know, and I was a political science major and I was doing really well in the course. He said, you could get a PhD. I had never met anybody with a PhD. I didn't even know what one was, but it planted the seed. And so you think about guidance counselors and mentors and folks who pour positivity into your life. And so the fact that we're on Baltimore Positive is really a reflection of what positive thinking and motivation can do. And so I've been blessed literally to get full scholarships to college, full funding for a master's and a PhD, and then being able to show that to my sons and say, hey, these are some of the opportunities. And what do we do with that opportunity? So, you know, I got a chance to work in Washington, D.C. after getting my master's. I worked in D.C. government. And then, you know, that thing in the back of my head about getting a doctorate was still there. I went to College Park. It was a wonderful experience. Go Terps. Moved to Baltimore 15 years ago, West Baltimore, bought a house. The rest was history. Got involved with the church, got involved with the neighborhood, ran a nonprofit, did media.
So hold on. You picked Baltimore.
I picked Baltimore.
See, that's always fascinating to me, you know, in the case of anyone that's not from around here. You know, Eric Costello, I live down at the harbor. I'm from Dundalk, sort of famously. I've lived in the city for 2 decades now. This whole thing got started because, you know, I love Baltimore because, like, I came off the boat, right? Like, Orioles, Colts leave, try to get the Ravens here. I'm the guy flying the flag for. I mean, I love Baltimore in that sort of a way. I always find it fascinating. My wife's from New Hampshire. We have dear friends that are from Philadelphia, that are neighbors that live here. But people that come from other places, what give me the attraction to Baltimore for you?
The one thing I say, it's real. I love the sincerity of people. You know, being from Philadelphia, then going to Washington, D.C., you know, a lot of times there's a certain pretense involved with Washington, D.C. Even though it's a great city, there's a certain pretentiousness there. You know, Baltimore reminds me a lot of Philadelphia. It's a hard scrabble city, but it's also, I would say, even a smaller connection of people. And it's much, much more family related area. You talk to someone, you'll talk about what high school they went to. They're very much connected to their communities.
Everyone from out of town says that. They're like, it's a high school town.
And I love that because it just shows that, you know, people are so connected. I've heard Smaltimore so many times, and I realized that. I've talked to one person and realized I'm talking to this person's cousin, this person's...
I had Danielle McCray talking trash about Brandon Scott's high school earlier today. You know what I mean? I put a Mervo Poly thing. I mean, it's not hard to do, you know?
It's amazing. And even in these times, you know, that folks stay connected. And I look at, you know, our colleagues on the council, and there's that good-natured ribbing between folks. And one thing I realized getting to Baltimore, the whole east side and west side piece, and that there's almost like two different worlds, but it's not much of a conflict. And so, I mean, trying to bring out the best in all of us. So I would just say, you know, there's a bumper sticker I've seen. It's like Baltimore, you know, I actually like it. And the thing is, I love Baltimore. It just draws you in. You know, you're here, you get the culture, you know, the sports, the fans, but just the people. And you know, it's kind of infectious.
Well, you know what Don taught me last summer, that they eat crabs differently on the west side than the east side, right, Don? We learn lessons on all this. You know, I want to throw this, and Don, I'll bring you back into this thing here. When I was a kid, because you love these stories of Julie Chanda and or now her last name is Szymanczyk, correct? You're on mute, Don. 2020.
Julie Szymanczyk.
She was my first grade teacher, and Don has been lifelong friends with her. So it's a whole east side thing. But my elementary school principal when like second grade was Dr. Kallmeyer, and he wasn't like a medical doctor. And when you're 7 years old, you're wondering, you know, and I do remember, and Don, here's where this is where the Archie Bunker, I grew up Archie Bunker, Dundalk. This is 1974, literally in Colgate, that the neighbors are like, who the hell do you think he is calling a doctor? He ain't no doctor. So I do remember a pushback, anti-intellectualism that I grew up with. But I did know you could become a doctor without a stethoscope. You know, I did learn that early.
Well, it's like the councilman said, and we don't want to run that one into the road. For me, it was just a personal journey. It wasn't about, and I'm sure it's the same for the councilman. It wasn't about having people, when I went back, to call me doctor.
People, well, the good news is people know that there is such a thing, right? Now. I didn't even know you were one. I've known you my whole life.
Well, it was the personal journey, as Dr. John said, never read more in my life, never exposed to such diverse thought in my life, and never challenged as much academically in my life. So,
as well, this goes back to critical thinking that we've talked about a lot, yes, right?
It was a personal journey. So that part was great. Now, John, for you, you've got all this background. You're a college professor. You're getting the doctorate. You're involved in community association issues. You're working in a nonprofit. At some point, as you know, you've heard me say, I tip my hat to anyone who jumps in and runs. I was involved in government for a long time. Never put my name out there to run through tragic circumstances, got it to serve for 7 or 8 months, but never ran myself. What prompted you to say, you know what, I've got to jump into this arena. I know it's hard. I hate raising money. They lock you in that little room down there and they can see you smile and they give you a list of names and you dial for dollars. It's awful. What made you want to do that?
So first I'll say, you know, you don't know what you don't know. So the first time I ran, I did not win. So it was 2011. And, you know, I didn't know what it took in terms of building a team and raising money. All I knew is I wanted to serve the community. I would knock on doors.
They didn't teach you that in college, right? I mean, all those poli-sci classes, it was all, you know, it was all stuff, but it wasn't the real stuff, right?
It's all theory. And so here's the thing that's so interesting. You know, one thing I love, and I just entered my grades for the semester at Towson University, so I'm happy to be done for the semester. And it was a different semester of all in terms of this virtual teaching. But I will say I was always inspired by my professors who had theory and practice. And so when I could tell my students, look, this is, I know the book is saying this and that's valid, but here's how it actually gets implemented. Here's where some of the challenges are and the bumps in the road. But I will be honest with you that, you know, having the experience of being have a master's in city planning and having a doctorate in government, you know, I wanted to use those skills and talents and blessings to help improve the community because I represent West Baltimore. And as many of us know, West Baltimore has a number of challenges. And so, you know, having a background in housing and community development, these have always been interests of mine as a young person growing up in a neighborhood that had challenges, living in a neighborhood that had challenges and wanting to make things better. So, you know, the second time around, I learned so much more about, you know, canvassing and campaigning and strategy and operations and all those things. But essentially, it's the heart to serve. But I realized how crazy I was jumping out there the first time and even the second time and even running again and being reelected for another term. You know, I'm up for another tour of duty. And it's not always easy, but it's rewarding, and I'm up for the challenge.
Well, tell folks, you mentioned you represent the West Side, near and dear to my heart, East Side, near and dear to Nestor's heart. Describe your district for folks. Where is the 9th District?
So I cover West and Southwest Baltimore. We don't go as far north as North Avenue. So we have the lower part of Sandtown, Harlem Park, Lafayette Square, Evergreen Lawn, Bridgeview Green Lawn, Rosemont, all the way down to Hollins Market, Union Square, Poppleton. So, you know, Franklin Square. So we have some areas that are doing well, some that are on the cusp of changing in terms
of your areas where Torrey Smith just came, correct?
Yeah. So again, you think about some of the investments within our community, right? I mean, it's huge. And so when folks can, you know, connect what they've done, whether it be in sports or philanthropy or education, and bring those resources to our community and show these young people that, hey, there is an opportunity. I know sometimes things may seem bleak, but there are people who care. And so, you know, West Baltimore, Southwest Baltimore, you know, we have some areas that have undergone some of the losses with, deindustrialization, the loss of industry, closing schools, violence, addiction, unemployment, incarceration. These are things that I've seen as a young person growing up and things I know that exist in our district. And so we have to work together as a whole city to deal with this. And I'm fortunate, to be honest with you, having, you know, not only a mayor who recognizes equity, a council president who recognizes the need for investments in West Baltimore. So working together, I'm hopeful that we can make some significant movement on some of these issues.
You know, we put this thing together a couple years ago. It was out of my anger of living here in the aftermath of Freddie Gray and in the aftermath of the mayor, mayors, both of the mayors, and corruption and all of that. And I think when this thing began 2 years ago, we didn't know where it was headed. But I think the core issue heading into the election was going to be crime, murders, that number, that 300 plus number that the news puts up every night for everybody in the counties and getting people back to the city. This is pre-COVID. And, you know, at that, I always hear optimism from people, and there's always, the one thing I've learned is so many good people. You pointed out there are good people trying to do good things here. With guns and crime and West Baltimore and the stigma of all of that, give us a picture of where we are in 2020, the reality, and then the hope for a guy like you that has put so much time into studying how to fix these things and how they've been cured in other places. You've dedicated your whole life to learning about this. I mean, I've had people on that, you know, tell me the stories of what's going on in Columbia. And I don't mean Columbia, Maryland. I mean the country. And in places where impoverished, crime-infested places, Detroit, and turnaround stories that have been a part of this. But you selected Baltimore, and I think it's probably part of your life's work that it has to begin with better relationships on the street and education in all parts of our city.
You were hitting so many excellent points. Let me just start with where you began in terms of Freddie Gray in 2015. You know, I mentioned, you know, the 9th District. The Western District Police Station is in the 9th District. Much of the unrest happened right to the north in the 7th District, although we did have some that happened in the 9th. And so one of the people who I've admired over years is Dr. King, right? And so one of the things he talked about, even, you know, prior to his assassination, was that, you know, riot or unrest was the language of the unheard. And so these are really symptoms of underlying causes. We look at disparities in education and employment and housing. And it was very interesting where some people descended upon West Baltimore. They saw vacant houses and they said, wow, the riots must have really had an impact. It's like, no, this has been this way. And so we look at, you know, cities like Detroit and Cleveland and Pittsburgh that have also undergone this loss of industry, loss of population. And so I share with folks, you know, Baltimore in 1950 had almost a million people, 950,000 people. And when those 300,000 people left, they didn't take their houses with them. And so we have this housing stock that has been left over. And so part of it is, you know, targeting things like or having targeted demolition, but also revitalization or rehab for housing. And so one of the things I've been very happy to sponsor and get passed in the last term was funding for the Affordable Housing Trust Fund, to really speak to these issues and create a real investment around them. But the reality is that, you know, education is key. I know I wouldn't be where I am if it were not for education. And unfortunately, a lot of our young people have not been prepared for the world that we're in, the 21st century. We think about the jobs of the future. And so we look at where places like I mentioned Pittsburgh before and other former Rust Belt cities have shifted from manufacturing toward education, medicine, technology. And so if you're not prepared for those career paths, you're left behind. And so it has to be that investment for education. I say that as an educator. But then also the reality is we're dealing with family issues, right? I mean, if you're in a neighborhood where you're worried about getting, to school safely, and you're worried about where your next meal is going to come from, you're not going to do very well in that environment. And I will be quite frank with you in terms of the crime and violence. You know, I think some of us were hopeful that, you know, during, the shutdown in terms of COVID, that things would cool down. But in fact, they've actually been on the uptick. And a lot of that speaks to just the severe need and fractured relationships within our communities, family structures, neighborhood structures, those gaps that we see, they're playing out right in front of us every day.
Well, Council, and again, if you're just joining us, we are with 9th District Baltimore City Councilman Dr. John Bullock, just recently inaugurated for another term. I guess the question that we get a lot, and we asked your colleague, Danielle McCray, we've talked with Eric Costello. We've talked with a number of city folk, talked with the mayor a number of times. What I think the problem that you all face, and I'm so happy to hear your optimism, is that people are almost on the verge of saying it is just what it is. We're a 300 and some homicide city.
Like we can't make it better, right?
We can't fix it. We got good people. I mean, John's a good guy. Danielle's a good guy. The mayor's going to try hard.
We must fix it.
I don't know that we can. Give us some hope and tell us what we can do concretely to start to drive these homicide numbers down?
You know, I think there are a few things. I mean, part of it is, you know, helping to build back our neighborhood associations and even our religious institutions. I see there's a gap in between many of our seniors. You go to some churches and synagogues and other institutions, you might see, you know, seniors and babies, but not as much of the folks in the middle age like myself who are in their 40s. I think that's part of it. But the other part also, I'll be honest with you, is also making sure that folks see the positivity in the city and coming here. You mentioned, you know, being downtown and being near the harbor. You know, one of the organizations that I led for a few years was the Downtown Baltimore Family Alliance. And part of the thrust of that is to attract and retain those young people who are coming into the city, those graduates of institutions locally, those folks who are investing in properties, because that also lifts up the school system. You know, when we're losing young people, when we're losing young people and families, those dollars follow those students to other jurisdictions. And so when we look at, you know, the school system in terms of its finances, having those bodies in the school, even virtually, that matters. That makes a whole lot of difference. The other part also, and you referenced this before, in terms of the relationship between, you know, neighborhoods, communities, and police. You know, quite frankly, I have a lot of seniors who will call around issues they see in terms of loitering or drugs or what have you, but restoring that faith in communities, for the average person to call with a degree of certainty that their voice is going to be heard. And you mentioned corruption. The fact is, we did have a situation where corruption was rampant in the police department, which also meant that folks were not comfortable coming forward, believing that they might be victimized or targeted. So we have to root out corruption, not only in terms of politics, but also in law enforcement, to give people that degree of certainty. And unfortunately, those, you know, the problems of the past still haunt us in many ways. And we want people to be able to call the police, but also rely on their neighbors. We have to rebuild. You think about what our communities were like in the 80s and earlier. It's not that they were perfect, but some of our structures were still in place. So we have to, you know, deal with the issue of crime and also enforcement. But then investing on that front end, recreation and education is also going to be key, because, you know, it's going to be less expensive and it's going to bear more fruit to invest in young people early on rather than trying to rehabilitate them later on after they've been in the criminal justice system.
Doc, the surveillance cameras sort of came back into light again this week. It's been a while since we talked about it. I think COVID sort of made it sort of go away. I mean, they could surveil me all they want. I've been sitting in the same spot for 7 months, except between here and State Fair and the supermarket, right? But the data coming back, you put a lot of effort into this. Thoughts about it? Just as a citizen, I'm in favor of it. If I ran for mayor and it was considered, I would have been for it. But I understand with the criminal element within the police department and people's concerns about privacy. You know, hey, I talk about sweet potatoes with my phone off. The next thing you know, I'm getting delivered sweet potato ads. Like, that happens all week. So I'm convinced the walls have ears in here and the Russians are listening. But where are you on the surveillance?
So I would just say, to your point, you know, we're very much in the future. You think about, you know, Big Brother or 1984 and it's all this kind of, you know, surveillance. But the reality is that, you know, I do believe that, you know, privacy rights need to be respected. And there's a certain expectation of privacy within one's home. At the same time, we have to use all the tools at our disposal as it relates to dealing with public safety. And if aerial surveillance along with ShotSpotter and other tools can help us to get to where we need to go.
ShotSpotter, stop there. Hang on. I live here. My wife last weekend, we're at the corner of Charles and I can't think of the name right now. Either way, there was a truck with a thing and my wife's like, hey, that thing's going up there. And I'm like, oh, okay. Tell me about that, because I think that's what it was, right?
So the thing is, you have the you know, the reaction to the sounds, right? And so then trying to pinpoint where the activity is coming from, and then using you know, other tools of the GIS to be able to pinpoint where the shots are coming from. You know, I understand that there are issues in terms of privacy concerns, and I've heard others who have been, you know, wary in terms of whether there'll be disparate enforcement, and we've seen that in the past. But I will say, hearing from many of my neighbors and residents, they're open to it. You know,
I feel better that it's on my corner. I'm happy with it.
And you make a good point in that, you know, I haven't really been going too many places, but once you leave, you know, your front door, the expectation of privacy is a bit limited. So again, I understand privacy rights, but I also understand we have to use the tools at our disposal. So I'm willing to work through that process because I think it can be useful if deployed correctly.
It was Conway, by the way. Go ahead, Don. You're on mute, buddy.
Councilman, who were the major influences in terms of elected officials? I know there were teachers and moms and dads and that, but as someone who now is an elected official, who were those elected officials in your lifetime that you looked at and said, man, that's me. I want to be that.
Wow, you know, that's such a great question, and there are so many places I can go with it. I'll start, you know, I'll mention two people who I think, you know, make a good point. So one, I'll start with Kirk Schmoke. You know, part of the way that I really got a chance to drill down in terms of Baltimore knowledge, having, you know, come here years ago, was doing my dissertation and looking at Baltimore, looking at Washington, looking at some of these figures. And so you look at someone, you know, someone who came up through the city, but also, you know, very much an intellectual who wound up, you know, dealing with things from an attorney's point of view and being a state's attorney and then being mayor and all the challenges around that. But interesting enough, the reason why I point to him is that he was one of the first people nationally that talked about addiction and drugs as a public health crisis. And had folks had the forethought and looked at it from that lens, we might have been able to avoid some of the pitfalls that we're dealing with now. And currently we're talking about it from a public health crisis. I also look at him as someone with a career after politics in education. I'm someone who's an educator, and I know that politics is not something that you spend the rest of your life doing necessarily. And so what do you do after the fact? The other person I point to is William Donald Schaefer. And he is someone who, again, learning the city. I tell anyone that, you know, I'm an educator, but I'm learning every day. And I look at someone like Schaefer, who spent years on the council, then years as the, you know, council president, and wound up being mayor and then governor and comptroller, that he's had a love for the people. But one of the things I really take away, and I do this myself, and people may not see it, but he would be in the back of community meetings taking notes. Right. And so those kinds of things, you know, being having that attention to detail and also learning. So I'm in my second term now, but I'm learning every day. And so I think there's a certain humility and a certain service that I see with those individuals. And you can go on throughout, you know, history in terms of individuals. But when you ask that question, those are the two figures that really came to mind.
Well, you have I was smiling because you have picked two of Nestor's favorite people. We've had President Schmoke on, and I encourage anyone who's listening to go just into the search bar at BaltimorePositive.com, type in Kurt Schmoke. His interview will come up. It's Nestor's alma mater. But Nestor talks about Kurt Schmoke and his William Donald Schaefer all of the time, citing a lot of the things that you did.
Well, Governor Schaefer, the statue has it. Just do it now. Do it now is what it says on, you know, on the little notes. For you, with the hope of Baltimore and the things that you see that are good things, and obviously you're involved in this for the right reasons, give me some hope here on the backside of COVID, that between all the things that are trying to come together now with Biden, Harris, and where this thing might go in Georgia, that the priority and the emphasis on education and manufacturing and local and jobs, that will be cool again.
You know, I was in another interview, and someone asked me,
not as good as this one.
Not as good as this one. Not as fun as this one. This is probably the most fun interview. I'll say that, you know, bar none.
It's not because of Mueller. It's because of me. I'm the fun one here.
but the question, it was prior to the general election, prior to our national election. And so, you know, the question was, what does this election mean? And I, and my answer was that it's really about the soul of this country. What do we believe in? Do we believe in, you know, in science? Do we believe in humanity? And where are we going as a country? And I think that we're righting the ship. But also, I would say, even though we've had some challenges during this these last 8-9 months, it's brought out some of the best in of us, right? There are people who have, you know, gone into their pockets, who have contributed, who have, you know, shown up. I think about our first line of resource workers and our
healthcare. Well, we're all looking for heroes on Sunday in football, right? And there's heroes everywhere, right? Literally.
Exactly. And even sometimes on alternate days of the week we see football. But the fact is, I think that, you know, people are inspired now, right? I think they're inspired in a different way. I think having, a president who seems like a very decent person, a president-elect who seems like a decent person, who also understands what it means in terms of having disinvestment, whether it be in Scranton or whether it be in Baltimore. When the current president talked about infrastructure at the outset, we never saw that investment. And so I'm hopeful that with this administration that's coming in, that we'll see this investment in infrastructure, that we'll see attention to our cities that have been oftentimes left behind, but also getting back into education and science and recognizing America's place not only in the world from a broad perspective, international relations, but also what we do for our environment, what we do in our country. And I even look at, the first lady to be, the fact that she's invested in community college education. The thing people forget is that she's been an educator in community colleges. And if we want to get our young people, even not so young people, retrain for the jobs of the future, the community colleges have to be the way. And so whether it's BCCC or CCBC, those are going to be the pipelines to get people trained in some of the skills that are going to be needed for the future. So I'm hopeful in some of those pieces that we can get our folks into those pipelines for careers. We're in a good place to be.
Mackenzie Scott this week. How about that?
Nestor, I swear to God, we're not passing notes through Zoom, folks. But Nestor just read my mind when the doctor talked about the incredibly inspiring things going on. I mean, my wife, Linda, and I looked at the TV and read The Sun. When you look at someone like Mackenzie Scott giving away $4.2 billion directly affecting institutions that we care deeply about here, the Y, the United Way, Morgan State, Bowie, I mean, all the HBCUs.
That is a serious local investment that government would not be able to do, right? Literally.
Let me just say how amazing that is. And I say that, as someone who's been affiliated with the YMCA back in Philadelphia. I was a camp counselor at the West Philadelphia YMCA. I ran the sports camp there. I'm a graduate of Hampton University, an historically black college that also received $40 million from Mackenzie Scott. So
go Pirates. Go Pirates.
Go Pirates. I love it. You know about the Pirates. That's what I'm talking about. Yes. And so you look at that in terms of our institutions here in Baltimore, it makes such a huge difference when folks are investing those resources, because we know that Baltimore is a city, we're cash strapped, and COVID hit us hard. We're looking at the downturn in terms of receipts for restaurants, hotels, venues, people are hurting. And so that kind of infusion of resources into institutions that are doing good things for young people and even not so young people is amazing. And a heartfelt thank you really goes out to her in that effort. Yeah.
It was really remarkable. Before we let you run, Councilman, we thank you for taking so much time with us. Just recently, Mayor Scott, right out of the chute, made the very, very difficult decision based on public health, public safety, to shut restaurants. And it's heartbreaking. All three of us, I'm sure, know restaurateurs. They're very good friends of ours. They're neighbors. They're relatives. They are hanging by a thread. I think the latest number is 110,000 restaurants have closed nationwide. The famous 21 Club in New York just closed recently. What do you say to the restaurateurs in your district who are trying to hang on, and what can we do to help them get through the next few months before this thing is in the rear view mirror?
Well, one, just saying that we feel your pain. These are institutions that serve our neighbors. I think about one of the places that I frequent a whole lot in the 9th District, Zella's Pizzeria. So shout out to Zella's.
You're gonna give me pizza recommendations? I'm skinny, but I eat pizza. What?
Zella's Pizzeria, 1142 Holland Street.
All right.
Go check it out. You know, again, they're open for obviously for takeout. I probably eat more pizza than I should, but the reality is that luckily I stayed thin. I do some running. And every race I was supposed to run this year got canceled, from the Baltimore Marathon to the Baltimore 10 Miler. You know, I love these races, but we know that, you know, we're in a tight spot for public health reasons. And so, you know, I would say, you know, if you can do takeout, make sure you do it. I will say I'm proud of my colleague, Eric Costello, Councilman Costello. I think about Council President Scott, Council President Mosby and Mayor Scott, looking at those surcharges for deliveries. Again, you know, we have to really support these restaurants, and I think they're doing a great job. So I'm happy to be serving with them. Even after getting sworn in on Thursday, I know it was going to be the last night to be able to go out and patronize a restaurant. So I was able to go out and get a meal, and even talking to the owner of the restaurant, talking about how worried he was, not only for himself, but more so for his workers. And so, you know, whatever we can do to support folks is important.
Look at his pizza, Don. Hold on here. Look at his pizza. How do I not know about this pizza? I'm Eastside. I'm Pizza John's. I mean, I always, but geez,
well, let's ask the councilman now. We've got him on here before. All right, councilman, if Nestor's getting ready to order there, what is the Bullock
special? My wife's
special?
Out of town. She eats roasted red. I'm getting that roasted so, red right there.
What's the Bullock special?
You know, everything is good there. You know, one thing I love, well, a couple things that I really love there since we're talking. So I'm a sucker for one pizza that my sons and I really like. We do a pizza with garlic sauce and spinach. I love another one with pesto sauce and mushrooms. You can make your own. They have barbecue chicken pizza. Everything that you're looking for, you have it there. But also, I would give a shout out also to their Old Bay wings, which are delicious. So you can look through that menu, and you'll find a lot of great stuff.
Man, that's good, man. See, that's shopping local. That's for everybody in every neighborhood. Take care of your local people. The way we're trying to at least talk up one business over at Zella's. Shout out to them on the West Side. How about that?
Absolutely. Thank you so much.
Hollins, man. You know, I'm hungry. Don will not let me get up and eat. So we're going to wrap things up now that I've done that. I'm going to get over to Fadley's and grab a crab cake. I hope everybody ships those out. You ever had Darker Brothers ice cream, Doc?
Oh, of course. You got to love it. It's great. I got to say one piece, because we're talking about intellectualism. I would just say, looking behind you, fragile.
Fragile.
Tis the season. You shoot your eye out, doctor. Dr. John Bullock joining us here, one of our council members here. We don't import much from Philadelphia. Pretzels, cheesesteaks, John Harbaugh, and you. How about that?
All right, I'm in good company.
That's good company there.
Fair enough. On behalf of former Baltimore County Executive Don Moeller, we're keeping the conversation moving here through the holidays during the pandemic, reminding everybody, wash your hands, stay away from your family. I mean, I don't mean that fully, but I mean, don't, right? Am I saying that right, guys?
That sounds good to me. We got to elbow the family. We're going to hug at one point again. We're going to have a group hug in the city.
I just want to give people some sense here to not be foolish during the holidays, right?
Right.
We got to stay safe here through this thing. And I say it sort of facetiously.
Mask up.
This is the year, if you got family members you don't like, this is a good year to skip it, okay? For all the reasons above. All right. Find me, Ness, at BaltimorePositive.com. We're mixing sports. We're mixing the holidays. We're even mixing some eggnog from our friends at the Harkett. Go save $15.70 when you enter that Baltimore positive code. Here, let my wife tell you about it. We are WNST.net, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore, and we never stop talking ice cream, the holidays, and Baltimore positive.